So we finished last week. We spoke about partnerships and halacha. So somebody asked me, what about the shutfos of Yisachar and Zvul? What about the partnership of Yisachar and Zvul? So I thought that would be a good continuation of the topic to speak about Yisachar and Zvul and partnerships. Especially Parshas Yisrael, we speak about Mamar Harsina, the giving of the Torah. So we all have a mitzvah to learn Torah. Can you split your schar in learning Torah with somebody else? If somebody furnished the money, the funds, the resources to enable a second person to learn Torah, the second person learns Torah, and the first person and the second person together split the schar. Is there such a thing, and is it really a partnership, if there is an arrangement of that sort? So we find a lot of discussions, interestingly, very fascinating discussions in the postgim, going back to the Rishonim, Sugyos in the Gemara, and so forth, based on Psukim, about whether there is such an idea of such a shutfus, or whether maybe, even if we call it a shutfus, we call it a partnership, maybe it's not technically really a partnership, maybe it's more just an arrangement where one person who facilitates another person's performance of a mitzvah, whether it's performing any mitzvah or learning Torah, gets credit for being a misayeya, nitbal li ose mitzvah. It gets credit like somebody who's a ose mitzvah. So maybe it's just a melitza to refer to it as a shutvah. So maybe it's a real shutvah. So here we have really very dramatically different approaches in the poskim. So we have two psukim in the Torah, which engender this discussion. One is at the end of Sefer Bereishis in Parshas VeYechi, when Yaakov is giving the brachas to his sons, and one is at the end of Sefer Dvarim in Vizos HaBracha, when Moshe Rabbeinu is giving the brachas to various shvatim, and it comes up with respect to Yisachar and Zvulun. Yisachar was born before Zvulun, but Zvulun somehow is mentioned first in the brachas in both locations. So in VeYechi, Yaakov says, Zvulun l'chop yamim yishkon, that Zvulun is going to settle by the seashore. Zvul l'chop aniyos is going to be at the ship's harbor. V'yachasal Sidon, his border is going to reach at Sidon. And then the next pasuk says, Yisachar chamor garem. Chamor is going to be a very strong-boned donkey. V'beis ben mishpasayim, he rests between the boundaries. So Chazal understood, Yisachar chamor garem, that he's a strong bone donkey because he is bearing the weight of a Torah, of learning Torah. As a passing in Divrei Yomim speaks about Yisachar as exemplars of Torah, calculating months and seasons in order to properly observe all of the holidays and so forth. So Rashi says there in Parshas Vayechi, Shehayu Zvulun Osek V'Pragmatia, Zvulun was the businessman, Mamsi Mazlan Shevet Yisachar Moskim B'Torah. Zvulun would provide Parnasa, would provide sustenance to the tribe of Yisachar to learn Torah. Hushama Moshe, and then Rashi right there alludes already to the psukim in, at the end of Devarim. Smach Zvulun b'tzeisecha v'Yisachar b'yoalecha. That's what we say. Zvulun amar smach Zvulun b'tzeisecha. Zvulun should be very happy with his going outs. V'Yisachar b'yoalecha, because and Yisachar should be happy sitting in its tents, meaning that Yisachar will sit in their tents of Torah, because Zvulun is going out, earning a living, and making a fortune off of business. Zvulun yosef b'prakmatia, Zvulun does its commerce, Yisachar osek b'torah ba'olim, and Yisachar is able to sit and delve into Torah inside of the Ohel Shetorah. And Rashi in Devarim is more explicit about the nature of this arrangement. Zvulun v'Yisachar osu shutfus. Says Rashi explicitly, it's a shutfus. It's a shutfus, it's a partnership. Zvulun l'chof yomim mishkan v'yosid v'akmatiyah v'sfinas v'mishtakir. V'nosin esal piv shal Yisachar gives nourishment to Yisachar v'yoshim v'yoskim v'toyver so that Yisachar can sit and learn Torah. They can sit in Kolo. The Fikach, therefore Rashi says, that's why. That's why, even though Zvulun was born later, they were born after Yisachar, nonetheless, Hiktim Zvulun the Yisachar, Zvulun is mentioned first, before Yisachar, Shetaraso, Shet Yisachar, Yidei Zvulun Haisa. Because the Torah of Yisachar was enabled through Zvulun. And Rashi then quotes afterwards the pasuk in Divrei Hayomim, Mibnei Yisachar Yodei Bina Leitim Hashem Asayim Hashem Sanhedrin Asay Yoskim Bekach. That the pasuk implies that they were Yodei Bina. They were people who were very knowledgeable. They were learned people. They were the ones who were calculating the Leitim. They were calculating all of the seasons. Apik V'yositem V'yiburim. So here it sounds like it's a legitimate thing. Like it's a real idea that you can have a shutvas in Torah, one person who is providing for the means, who's providing for the support, and the other person who's learning Torah, and they have a shutvas together, and they it's a shutvas, so they're splitting the skar together, presumably. So the Gemara in Sota casts a pall on this entire notion. It asks a question with respect to a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. It says, Bozi Abuzulo. Bozi Abuzulo, what is that referring to? It says, Kitenish is called Hombe Soba Abba Bozi Abuzulo. A person gives away all of their possessions out of love, out of love. So we say people will laugh at such an individual, scorn such an individual. Huh. What do you think you're getting out of it? You think out of love, you're going to give away all of your money? You're not going to have anything left. Money can't buy you love or whatever. So Amar Ula, so Ula says, Lo Kishimon Achi Azariah. This is not like Shimon, the brother of Azariah. That was fine. That was fine. That's a Mishnah at the beginning of Masechet Zevachim, quotes different Shitos, and the first Mishnah, Da Beis Amidah, Masechet Zevachim, quotes Shimon Achi Azariah saying something. You Shechta Kachi Kalim, and you have in mind Kachi Kachim, it is Kashir, you Shech Kachi Kachim, you have in mind Kachim Kalim, which is a lower level, it's not Kashir, you're not Yotze. So we have a statement, but why is Shimon called Shimon Achi Azariah? Normally a person is called Shimon Ben somebody else, right? What's this Shimon Achi Azariah? So he says that's okay to be Kishimon Achi Azariah, but look at Rabbi Yochanan ben Nasi. It's okay to be like Rabbi Yochanan from the prince's house. He's called from the prince's house because Shimon was supported by Azariah. Rabbi Yochanan was supported from the prince's house, and that was okay. They wouldn't have been able to learn otherwise. That was a fine arrangement. When we say Bozi Abuzalo, we're going to ridicule an individual, we're going to treat them with scorn, that's referring to a different arrangement of Hillel and Shebna. That was not considered to be a legitimate arrangement. That's one that we would treat with scorn. And look, Hillel v'Shebna, what was so bad about the Hillel v'Shebna arrangement? Chiyasav Avdimi Amma Hillel v'Shebna Achiyavu. Hillel v'Shebna, like Shimon and Azariah, they were brothers. Shivna, Hillel asked for Torah. Hillel learned Torah. But Hillel didn't need a lot of money to learn Torah. The Gemara in Yuma Daf Lamed Daled says that Hillel was very poor, and he would learn Torah as Machayev Aniyim. He would learn Torah despite the fact that he was very, very poor. He managed somehow without any money. But he still learned Torah for many years, and Shivna Avad Iska. Shivna all of that time, he's making a killing, he's running a hedge fund, I don't know. He's running a very profitable business. The Sof Amalei, so Shemna then says to Hillel at the end of this period of time, he says, you know what, all this time I was earning a fortune of money, you are learning a ton of Torah, so now let's kind of make a split deal. Amalei san nava v'liflug, I'll give you, you know, half of the money that I earned, and you give me half of the skar that you earned from all the Torah that you learned over all of these years. Yotze Basko came out of heaven, v'oma, so a person's going to give away all of their possessions out of love, maybe love for Torah, whatever. We're going to treat the person with scorn. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. There's no such thing as creating this type of a shutvah. So on the one hand, the Gemara in Sota says it doesn't really work. With Hillel v'Shebna, on the other hand, the Gemara in Sota says, but we're not talking about Shimon Achi Azariah. Shimon Achi Azariah, that's perfectly fine. What was Shimon Achi Azariah? So Rashi tells you, Shimon Achi Azariah, that source above, Tanu Mishnah Kamai said this Vachim. He said, Tani's mentioned this. I quoted more or less what he said in the beginning of Masechet Zevachim. Lama Torah Deya Achim, Sheyosek V'Pragmatia. He was able to learn Torah because his brother Azariah supported him. Kadei Sheyaklik V'Skus Limudo Shel Shimon. The Kaku Nikol Shem Azariah Achim. That's why he's actually called after the name of his brother, because his brother enabled his learning, and that was a good thing. Rabbi Yochanan was able to learn Torah because the prince and the prince's house supported him, so that was considered to be a good thing. But Shemna and Hillel, that was not considered to be a good thing, because I guess number one, Hillel was able to learn Torah independently of Shemna. He learned even through poverty. He didn't need Shemna's money in order to learn. And secondly, there's a difference in terms of just the timing of the deal. Shimon couldn't have gotten off the ground to start learning if Azariah hadn't supported him. Rabbi Yochanan wouldn't have been able to get off the ground to start learning if the debate Nisiya does not support him. But in the case of Hillel, he already learned. He learned this. So after the fact, you can't turn around and say, oh, here's money, I want to buy your Olam Haba. But before the fact, if it's prospective in nature, and one person is enabling the other person to learn, so obviously the enabler gets a scar. Now the question is, do they get a scar for enabling? Is it an enabling scar, or is it a full-fledged partnership share? Is it considered to be a full-fledged partnership, or is it just that they get the scar of an enabler? So the Maram Al-Shakur, Simon Kofal, who's Maram Al-Shakur? He was one of the Jews who left in the Spanish expulsion. In 1492, he was born in Spain in 1466, and after the expulsion, he moved to Cairo, and eventually he died in Yerushalayim in 1542. He was a little bit older than Rav Yosef Karo. Rav Yosef Karo was born in 1488. He was about 20 years later, so he was 20 years the senior of Rav Yosef Karo, the Maram Al-Shakur. The Maram Al-Shakur was asked this very question about, can you make this type of a deal? Can you sell your merits to somebody else? Okay, can you have such a business deal? Can you have such a business deal? There are cases like this that, you know, sometimes make their way to business. I want to enforce the deal and get a declaratory judgment. Somebody came to us. They came to the business a couple of years ago. They wanted a declaratory judgment. They gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to a particular shul, and then they saw that they felt that the rabbi was not treating them with the proper respect and kavod for all the money that they gave. And they came to the Bez and they said, you know, I gave all this money to the shul, and I made a deal with the rabbi that I would get his Olam Haba, that I would get his Olam Haba. Now this rabbi isn't treating me very well, but I want him to know, I want there to be a record that I have his Olam Haba, because I bought his Olam Haba. It was hundreds of thousands of dollars. They came to the Beis Din, they wanted a declaratory judgment from the Beis Din that he had purchased this rabbi's Olam Haba. Okay, so Shaila, Maram Al-Shakur, we'll get back to it. So Maram Al-Shakur was dealing with this question, does this work or not? So he says, well, I don't have to figure out the answer myself, because the truth is Rabbeinu Haigon from the Gonim, he already has an answer to this question. And he says he was dealing with a case where a person who fasted every Monday and Thursday, and at the end, he wanted to give all of his sechar to another individual. He says that I wanted to sell my sechar for all of these fasts to somebody, and they made a kinyan, and he wanted to be able to collect money from this. Or somebody who gave some golden coins to an individual so that individual will learn Torah, and when that person learns Torah, the one who gave the money will get the sechus. It doesn't even say he'll get 50%, he'll get like the full sechus, presumably, according to, you know, this deal. They're not even talking about a Yisachar Zvulun arrangement. So if Haigon says, this is garnished. It's garnished. And he says that it's garnished for a couple of reasons. Number one, he says, it's Xeris HaKasuv. You can turn the page. It says Xeris HaKasuv. He says in Sefer Yecheskel, Perek Yecheskel, Sitka Satsadik Alav Tiyeh, Perisha Sarasha Alav Tiyeh. That you can't give away either your Zechuyas or your Machovos. You can't give away the virtues that you've earned, and you can't give away the vices that you have committed. Each person basically is held responsible for their own actions, whether it's for good or whether it's for bad. Nobody is held, nobody gets credit, nor is anybody held responsible for another person's actions. Xeris HaKasuv, he says, that's what it says in Yechezkel. Ish b'chato, right? Yumasu, that every single person has to stand alone based on their own merits. Secondly, he says, ilu yadu ma'u aschar. He says we can't know exactly what the proper reward is to know how much to charge. Ilu yadu ma'u aschar lo yaseh nosno lo zeh, lo zeh mekablo mizeh. that if you knew what it was, then this person would never have given away his mitzvahs, and this person would never have purchased it, because it would have cost like trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. And then he quotes about the tremendous reward that's given to people who fulfill mitzvahs and earn the reward in Shemayim for Olam Haba, that there is no calculation that you can properly make. So whatever is going to be charged is going to, it's going to be wrong. It's going to be in the wrong ballpark. It'll be like a mefaktos. And then about 10 lines later, he says that despite the fact that the sale is no good, this person who sold their zechuyos, they fasted all of these days. They were performing a mitzvah, presumably coming close to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, being contrite, doing tshuva, and they fasted all of these days. They lost completely. They lose all of the zechuyos that they accumulated, despite the fact that the sale is no good, because of the fact that they have treated the mishon a complete contempt for the mitzvahs that they performed. Ki asa shem shemayim plasta v'chakardum lelecho bo lechem. They show that all the mitzvahs mean for them is that it is like a something to hammer away in order to earn bread and something to conduct a business transaction with, but not because they have any kind of love or fear for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but just because they want to make a buck. So therefore it's like Ve'yivez Esa Ves HaBechora, because of the fact that they're treating mitzvahs with such contempt. So even though the sale is invalid, a person who engages in such a sale, who had done mitzvahs, will lose the scar of all of their mitzvahs. Aval vaday, but then he says, this is, I put in bold so you can find it more easily, aval vaday mishinosin l'skar l'malamid l'amid ma'ashehen srichen, but if you're going to give money to a malamid so he'll facilitate your being able to learn Torah, or other people to be able to learn Torah, skip a couple of lines, so can Messiah and Mekayim mitzvahs, or you're going to support and help other people to perform mitzvahs, kadesh yukul kayim, so they'll be able to perform mitzvahs, yesh l'skar akak, so of course there's a skar for facilitating and enabling another person's mitzvahs. It's just that you can't sell your olam haba to somebody else, either because segzeres akasuv, or because it's like a mekaktos because you can't properly calculate it, or because it's a bizoy mitzvah, so that you can do, but to help facilitate the performance of a mitzvah, that is a separate pu'ula. It's not like a partnership or a business deal. You just get an independent schar because you're enabling a mitzvah to be performed. You're going to help people who are performing mitzvahs and are learning Torah. You're going to support a kolel so that people will be able to, you'll have a bachum and avreichim and will be able to sin and they'll be able to learn Torah. So obviously you get schar for that. You're not getting somebody else's olam haba. You know whose olam haba you're getting? You're getting your own olam haba. You can't take away somebody else's olam haba, but you can certainly get olam haba on your own for supporting somebody else. It's not a skar shudvus. It's not that you're taking what the other person's share would have been. It's that you are getting your own skar for your own pu'ula. The other person, they get their skar for Talmud Torah, whatever the skar for Talmud Torah is, they get a complete 100% unmitigated skar, but you get skar pu'ula, so the skar of the contributing. However, if you think you're going to acquire somebody else's merits or sechar, that doesn't work, and that's his next line. But you want to acquire somebody else's sechar, you're going to pay money, you're going to give away your sechar, lavozu. So that's something to be scorned, v'lag, and that's going to be a source of derision. And that's what the pasuk says in Shir Shirim. Im yitain ish es kol hon beiso b'ahava, boz yavuzu lo. Right? And he quotes from the Gemara in Sota, and he says, and that's the end of the story. So says Mara Malshiker, that's the end of the story. There's no acquiring somebody else's mitzvos. There's no acquiring somebody else's skar. It doesn't work. The person comes to Bez Din, and they say that I spent the money and I acquired this person's olam haba. Well, you threw your money out the window. You threw it. If that's what you intended to accomplish through paying the money, so you didn't get your deal. The transaction was null and void.
According to him, is Talmud Torah any different than any other mitzvah?
He does not distinguish.
If I give somebody a lulav and esrog, so they're unable to do a mitzvah.
He puts them together. If you look very clearly at the Lashon, asukim b'Torah uve mitzvos. He puts the two of them together. Now, if you take a look in the Ramah, The Ramav in Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Talmud Torah Siman Reish Mem Vav Sif Aleph does not seem to say exactly what the Maharam Al Shikr says. The Ramah seems to say something a little bit different. He says, "Mishi'ayev shelo lilmo, mishi'ayev yudeh klamo, mishi'ayev yudeh shi'eshlo." This person is not able to learn because they don't know how or because they're very busy. Yasbik lachayim alom them, so you should help somebody else. That's what the Machaber says. That sounds like the Maharam Al Shikr. You get, you know, a scar by supporting a person's learning. You get, you know, the scar of support, of scar pulaso. Says the Ramah, so now the Ramah goes further and says, and it considers if that person is actually learning. Sounds like, okay, maybe the scar that they get is the same level scar. Then he says as follows: a person can make an actual tenai with his chaver. You're going to make a tenai with somebody else, that this sounds like a tenai shutfus, right? Sounds a little bit like Rashi on Devarim, because Rashi and Devarim said Yizavul and Yisachar Yisachar Asu Shutfus. You take a look at the Rashi in Zavachim, which I did not copy. Rashi in Zavachim says about Shemaya, Shimon, and Azariah, Behisnu Beneim. They made a tenai. They made a tenai between them. She Yehechela Kol Azariah Biskar Tamudo Shel Shimon. That Azariah is going to get part of the tzchelik of the schar of Shimon. Okay, right? So he says here, Yachol Adam, back to the Ramah, La'asav Simchaveru, Shuyasav B'toira, Fuyamsi Lo Parnasa. One of them will learn, the other one is going to provide Parnasa, like two partners that are going in. One is the partner who's providing the funds, and the other partner is managing the investment, right? Okay, he has, you know, he has the brains to manage the investment, and the other one is contributing the capital. They split 50-50, right? That's what it sounds like. Boy, does it sound like that in the next few words of the Ramah, because the next few words of the Ramah says it explicitly. It says, v'yachlok imo askar. And they split the skar, 50-50. But then he just gives the distinction that we found pretty clearly set in the Gemara in Sota. He says that this is only if it's prospective. But if it's retrospective, for asuk b'tayra, enu yachol limko lo chelko v'shimo mamon shi'itnu lo. So then, you can't have a sale of one person's chelik if they've already learned. So it has to be, on the one hand, that you're facilitating the person's learning. But on the other hand, from the Ramah, it sounds a little bit more like a shutras. Who does he quote? He quotes a Rabbeinu Yerucham. Now it's interesting because if you look at the lashon of Rabbeinu Yerucham that he's quoting, Rabbeinu Yerucham does not have this lashon of v'yachlok imo askar. Rabbeinu Yerucham has the lashon of v'yito chelek milimudo. He'll get a chelek. Doesn't say it's going to be a 50-50 share. He'll get some sort of a chelek. Maybe he'll get 10%. But the Ramah seems to be very deliberate about saying, no, v'yachlok imo askar sounds like it's going to be a 50-50 a share. Okay.
Yachlok means 50?
Yachlok, you know, sounds a little bit like 50-50. In fact, if you have any doubt about it, so that's why the Shach felt he needed to write his commentary, because people might not be 100% sure. So if you look in Sur Siyud, so the Shach in his commentary to that Ramah says, V'yachlok imo skar, what does that mean? Klom askar Torah skar mashi yaviach, that the skar of the Torah that's learned, that's the spiritual reward of the Torah, v'skar mashi yaviach zeh, and the monetary reward of the investments, of the person who's playing the zavulun role, right? Mashiach viach kama zeyeye ben shneihem biyachad. So that's going to be split ben shneihem biyachad. Sounds very much like a 50-50 split. That's what it sounds like in terms of the distinction between l'sha'aver and mikano l'haba. So the Beis Hillel in his commentary of the Shulchan Aruch, that source test, the Beis Hillel, of course, being the contemporary of L'Chilkas Mechokek from the 17th century. We quoted the Beis Hillel when we were talking about establishing Jewish identity, that he established, that he quoted the Min of Lithuania, that we always check out a person's yichus if they're coming from a country and we don't know, you know, anything about their family. So Beis Hillel says that it's all based on that Gemara in Sota, Kehillel B'Shevna, Hillel Asuk B'Tarashin Abidiska, and we said, and the Basco came out and said that you can't, you know, split the reward after the learning has already taken place. Asuk Lasuskein, Aval, but he says that the implication of the Gemara is, in the case of Shimon Achiyazayim Rabbi Yochanan, they made the Tanai to begin with, that this was going to be a Tanai, that they have this partnership together. What they did was a good thing. It was a nice thing. He says, and that's the end of the story. And the Aruch HaShulchan also draws that distinction. He says, you can make a real Tanai. It's like a real partnership. You look in the Aruch HaShulchan there, he says, V'yachol, second line, V'yachol adam la'asas sukaver she'yasek b'tari, v'yasek lo parnasa, V'yachol kimo askar, you split the skar in far asek b'tari, and v'yachol lim kolo chelko, shomama she'itein lo benadifis after the fact, and he gives you the reason. He tells you about Tam Pashit. You want to know an explanation? Says the Aruch HaShulchan. I'll give you the explanation. Explanation goes like this. The Skar Olam Haba Eino Bevechira. You can't sell the Skar Olam Haba. That's not, it's not just a question of the learning already took place. You can never sell the Skar of the Olam Haba. The thing is that in the case where the Tanai is made at the very beginning, the Olam Haba is being earned by the person who's supporting the other one to learn. Zebulun is earning, he's not buying Yisachar Skar Olam Haba. He is earning his own Olam Haba by being 50% of this Shutfus. Because this Shutfus was brought about through his investment as much as it's brought about through Yisachar's learning. So the Olam Haba that's coming in, the Skar that's coming in, when it comes in, it's coming in 50% in favor of Yisachar and 50% in favor of Zebulun. He's not taking away Yisachar's Olam Haba. Yisachar never had it in the first place. It's a partnership agreement. This is how the partnership dividends are coming in equally to both of them. And that's what he says. The person who earns it is the one who gets it. When they both join the partnership of learning together, so they both are performing the mitzvah. Keep going. Kimo, Yisachar uZebulun. I was throwing in Yisachar uZebulun into the mix. V'Shimon Achi Azaria. And about such people, we say Eischaim Hi L'Machazikim Ba. He has a cryptic statement at the end because he seems to be saying yes, there is a. Schar that Zebulun is getting because of the fact that he is participating in the mitzvah by virtue of furnishing the funds, enabling Yisachar to learn. So he's v'somchem miushar and so forth. But then he goes on to say, and I leave this to your own imagination what he's saying. Says that all the brachos go, that there are many brachos that are showered upon a person who supports Torah learning. But the Talmidei Chachamim themselves, nobody can possibly approximate or estimate the amount of their reward, because it's beyond our comprehension. Our eyes are not even able to behold or to imagine that reward. So does that mean it's not 50-50? Yisachar is really getting more than Zebulun? Not entirely clear, but he does separate that. And then he has a very interesting statement I'll just mention, you know, in passing in Siftes, because if you look at Moshe Feinstein has a very long tshuva, which I've conveniently condensed for you towards the end of the materials, in Chelek Dalet of Yeridea, Simen Lamed Zayin, which he goes through all the details of the Yisachar-Zebulun relationship. And he makes sure to mention that, you know, Zebulun is not putter from his mitzvah Talmud Torah. He still has to do a little bit. Kriyashma, Shacharis V'Arvis, he'll learn Kabanos, you know, when he starts Davins in the morning. He'll say a little bit to be Yotze, just, you know, the bare minimum of Talmud Torah. He's not going to be putter because of the fact that Yisachar is also learning and he's getting, you know, schar from the learning that Yisachar is performing. It doesn't take away from his independent requirement to learn Torah. The Aruch HaShulchan says, in the opposite direction, don't think that just because Yisachar is sitting and learning Torah, that exempts him from his responsibility to support Torah institutions. He says that just like the people who are not immersed in learning Torah all day have to support the Torah institutions, the people who are immersed in learning Torah all day also have to support Torah institutions. Everybody has a little bit of money, so whatever amount of money a person has, they should, you know, even if they are a Talmid Chacham, since Torah is so chaviv, you know, it's a Talmidei Chachamim, right? Therefore, certainly somebody who is a Talmid Chacham should definitely give a certain amount of their income to support Torah institutions, because this is part of having your love and affection for Talmud Torah. Klal Dvar Meim, Kolom Lomei Torah Be'atzmo, Chaviv and Allah, Hamitzos, the obvious, the Chacham, the Tomachan, the Messiah, Shiyum, the Viaska, the Torah, the Hefech, the Avko, that if the Torah is really, really cherished to you, then, Shadibi Torah Chaviv and Aleichem, right? Then for sure you're going to support Torah institutions. So, Rav Shlomo Kluger, I'm not going to go through every single line in the tshuva, but it's a very interesting tshuva. So he has a very interesting case that he dealt with. This is in the Tuf Tam Midas, Simon Reish Yud Zayin, Shlomo Kluger, of course, being a much later authority, late 18th century, 19th century in Poland. So Shlomo Kluger says there was somebody, not like we're assuming, or from the words of the Ramah, that it has to be a 50% sale, but there was a person who sold, let's say, 25% of their Olam Haba to somebody else. This is the Bezin case that he had. They said, and the question was there a proper Kenyan? It was just written on a piece of paper, but they weren't Mekabel Kenyan. He just said, I'm selling a quarter of my Olam Haba, and he received money. The learner says that the one who's, you know, who sold his chelik says, I feel bad that I sold my chelik, and I'm going to give back the money. I want my chelik in Olam Haba back. I don't want the 25%. I'm going to need that 25%. So I want my 25% Olam Haba back. You can have my money back. And Okay says, I don't want the money back. I want your 25% chelik in Olam Haba. So they came, you know, and he was an Abbas and Shlomo Kluger, you know. So they came and they said, what's the deal? So Shlomo Kluger says, the whole thing is a big joke. He says that the one who acquired the 25% chelik would be a moron not to take the money back because he didn't actually acquire anything. He bought the Brooklyn Bridge. He didn't buy a 25% chelik and all. You can't buy somebody's chelik and Olam Haba. He says, the money's just completely lost. He put it on, you know, the horn of a deer. It's going to run away with it. Olam Haba ain't about mechira. Olam Haba can't be sold. And he quotes from the Gemara in Sota. And he says, I'm going to tell you the reason for this. And the reason he explains is a very interesting reason. And he says that the reason is that Olam Haba and any kind of schar that comes min Hashemayim is a complete matana from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes it possible for us to do mitzvahs altogether. We wouldn't be able to do anything if it wasn't facilitated or enabled by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We don't really deserve any schar. We put up a mezuzah, yeah, who gave us the house? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the house. We don't deserve any schar. So the fact that it's a schar, it's a matana from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended to give the matana to this person and not the matana to the other person. So therefore, the matana, it's not transferable. It's that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing a favor for this individual, but it's not necessarily schar that was earned or something that's tangible that can be given over to somebody else. So he says that's the reason why it doesn't. That's the reason why it doesn't work. And he says it only works in the other direction for all the reasons that we said, meaning prospectively, when somebody is about to start learning and they don't have the means to do so and somebody is helping them. So the reason why it works is not necessarily because of the shutfus idea, but because of the fact that this other person is getting a schar for enabling learning, because he's enabling learning. And he says that's the reason why Zebulun comes first in the Pasuk. We gave the reason beforehand that Zebulun comes first in the Pasuk. Rashi gave the reason because Tarasov Sheyisacho Ayadei Zebulun Haisa. He gives a different reason from quoting his son. I don't know what ever happened to his son. He had a son, Chaim Yehuda. So Chaim Yehuda gets honorable mention over here. Chaim Yehuda said, I have a great pshat. The reason why Zebulun comes first is because this entire Yisacho Zebulun arrangement only works when Zebulun comes at the beginning of the deal. It only works when Zebulun is there at the beginning. That's why Zebulun comes first in the Pasuk. Smak Zebulun to say Sechem. Because if he would only come afterwards, like in the case of Shevner and Hillel, so then he wouldn't be able to get any schar. He only gets schar when he's facilitating the learning at the very beginning. I thought that was very good. I liked it. And then he points out that if you look in the Ramah also has this chiluk between before and afterwards, and he says it's for a very simple reason, Because obviously, once a person has earned the Olam Haba, they can't sell the Olam Haba. It's only that a person can receive schar for facilitating another person's learning when they start off that way. And then he goes into a question as to whether this is something which is specific to Torah, or whether it's also true with respect to mitzvos, that maybe it's only Torah that it's such an ethereal thing to learn Torah that it's certainly something that the schar cannot be sold and transferred. But maybe for mitzvos is something which is more transferable, because after all, the Ramah only speaks about Torah and doesn't speak about mitzvos. You asked that question, Emil, whether this is only a discussion about Torah, also mitzvos. So he says, no, it's quite clear that with respect to mitzvos, that Kadosh Baruch Hu is facilitating a person's performance of mitzvos, because we even have Amayma Chazal Masecha Sukkah, that Lulei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ozu Einu Yakolo, a person wouldn't be able to combat the Yetzer Hara. But I might have thought the Torah is more of a person's own possession, because we say Kivus Torah Hashem Chepso V'Sorasso Yegei Yomam V'Laila. The first it's called Torah Hashem, but then you kind of like own Torah after a while. So I might think that that's more kind of a commodity of your own. So, but the Chiddush is no. Even Torah can't be sold. So look at the last few lines bolded by Rosh Shlomo Kluger. Rakoka dinyan olam haba inu nimka klau te'enu shalom rachesed abore matanetz and matanet from HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'kakla she'ovar kimin lo ayod olamot. Since the person already earned their olam haba, you can't retrospectively sell anything. But if it's prospective, kimin dal yadu lo made, since the movement is facilitating Yisachar's learning, yosa yesh lo chelak, then he has a chelak. Aval lo kod lo al yadu hu osik enu ba machiva la haba. But if the Zebulun is not facilitating the learning, so then you certainly can't take what you've already learned, you can't take what you've already earned in terms of Olam Haba and sell it to somebody else. Now, there is sort of a side discussion that I'll just mention quickly about whether mitzvos can be sold, but it's really not so much talking about, from what I can tell, that you've earned the schar of the mitzvos and now you're selling it to somebody else. It's more kind of a question of that if you have the ability to do a mitzvah, and then you sell it to somebody else, is that something, or you give it to somebody else, does that person have a monetary right to the mitzvah? So if it's taken away from that individual, somebody would have to pay them, to compensate. Because we do have the case, as that's discussed in the Gemara in the Chulin, regarding Rabbi Gamliel. That when it comes to kiso yadam, the Torah says b'shafach v'chisa, that the person who slaughters the animal has first dibs on the mitzvah of kiso yadam. So there was somebody who came along when one person slaughtered an animal, another person came along and he chat kiso yadam, he covered the blood. It's like a chayah or an oaf requires kiso yadam. So Rabbi Gamliel required the person who stole the mitzvah, so to speak, to pay to the person who had the possessory rights to the mitzvah, ten zehuvim. So the question is, does this show that mitzvos can somehow be sold? So Shilte Gibarim in Baba Kama, in the Daf Yarif, down for Lamed Beis, Amid Beis, Shilte Gibarim, interestingly, also lived around the same time as the Maharal Malshiker, also was expelled from Spain, was born a little bit later in 1480. The Shilte Gibarim, Yeshua ben Shimon Boaz. So he says, look about four lines before the bottom, V'fize yale yafe mashikasakti. I didn't find where he wrote this. He says, yep, but he wrote it here. Yale yafe mashikasakti da'adim yachalim ko mitzvah shelo. That you can actually sell your mitzvahs. What he means is the right to perform a mitzvah. I have the right to perform a mitzvah, so according to Shilte Gibarim, I can make a deal. Somebody will give me 10 zehuvim for the right to do kiso yadam. Just like we impose a penalty upon somebody who would grab my mitzvah away from me, that he would have to pay me 10 zehuvim. If he took away my mitzvah kiso yadam, I can sell my right to somebody else for 10 zehuvim. Now, the Shilte Yagiborim in Chulin quotes the Rosh, look four lines down in source Tezvav, as disagreeing. Because the Rosh talks about a moil, who's given the right to perform the mitzvah by a father. A father has the mitzvah to do a bris milah of his son, and he gives it to a particular moil. And now somebody else comes along and grabs the mitzvah away. So he says, "Even though the father told one moel to circumcise his son, he does not have a possessory right in the mitzvah to require a compensation from somebody else who chops the mitzvah. You know, somebody else just like sprints across the room and chops up the baby, whatever, you know, before the moel has a chance to do so." He says that if somebody else would grab the mitzvah away from the father, that's one thing, but if the father sells his right to somebody else, it can't be sold. Fine. He says that everybody else shares the same level of a mitzvah. It's from the Sheol Sechuas, the Rosh Klal Yud Beis, the Siman Gimel. I gave you the actual text of the Rosh. You can turn the page. So the Ramah, how does he paskin? The Ramah paskins like the Rosh. The Ramah, when it comes to the sale of mitzvah, says very, very clearly, so that it's not that this is something which is transferable. He says that if you gave it to somebody else, you must know le'echad, that if a father gave the right to perform the bris milah to somebody, but if he's kosher, he has the right to do so. You can't make a kinyan on this. He says, if there would be a shavua, so then we tell a person that they have to honor their shavua. But in terms of there being a kinyan or any kind of a monetary right, so he says there's absolutely no monetary right with respect to the person who was given this privilege of performing the bris milah by the father. So it could be that it's a wrong thing to do for somebody to take it away from the moel, as the Piskei Tshuva talks about over here, but in terms of a monetary right, there is no monetary right because you simply can't sell mitzvah. So ad kedei kach, here we're not even, the machlokas, the shilta gibarim, and the rush, is not even talking about whether you can sell the schar that you've already earned from the mitzvah. He's saying you can't even sell the right to perform a mitzvah because of the fact that it's just an intangible thing. So kal v'chomer, that you can't sell the schar that was earned for purposes of a mitzvah. So the Netziv, if you look at the source Yutes, the Meshiv Dov, the Netziv, so he has the following case where somebody wanted to go back on the deal. In this case, it wasn't the person who sold his Olam Haba, it was the person who bought it. The person who bought it said, wait a second, I'm paying a fortune for this guy to learn Torah so that I can split the schar of this person's learning of Torah and this person's performance of mitzvahs, because I think that he's such a tzaddik, but he found out he wasn't such a tzaddik, he's more of a tzatzkal. So he says that I thought that this guy was such a saint, but he turns out that he's just a run-of-the-mill kind of guy. And now why am I giving him such a big fortune? So he had agreed to give 22,000 rubles, and he already gave 11,000 rubles, so he wants the 11,000 back, and the other guy, who sold his Olam Haba for 22,000 rubles, wants the other 11,000. He says, hey, I gave you my Olam Haba, you promised me 22,000, you'll give me 11,000. So who wins this case? Regila Shoah didn't meet. So who wins this case? So, you know, I mean, these are like the real fun Dine Torah, right? Mm-hmm. So it says in the Tzif here as well, doesn't work. You're going to sell your Olam Haba for money, so it goes to show that you're not worth anything. Then he explains that it's like the sky that you get for learning Torah. He has a whole big essay over here, and I, you know, printed the whole thing because it's very interesting reading. But he says that the schar that you get for learning Torah is like being appointed a general in God's army. Okay, Tzivos Hashem. You're being appointed a general in a Kaddish Baruch Hu's army. So you can't be general because you purchased, it's like purchasing, like maybe you could purchase like the right to be senator, you know, or something in Illinois. But like to be a general, like, you have to, like, know what you're doing. You have to know how to run an army. You have to know how to do military strategy. You gotta know how to, you know, plan out a battle. You have to know how to defend yourself. You have to know about different types of weapons. You don't know the first thing about, you know, the military, about, you know, being a general. So the whole thing is just gonna be a galachter. It's gonna be a giant joke that somebody is, like, wearing this military uniform and he has the general star on him and he's not, you know, he's not general material. He says that what's gonna happen is, you know, when it comes to the sky, Dvar Torah, you're sitting with Yeshiva Shomayla. You look at the end of the second paragraph on page 6, the beginning of the Ratan Novo, so he says that Skar Mitzvah, Skar Torah, the line begins with the word Skar Torah, conveniently, who Yoshe be Yeshiva Shomayla, person sitting in Yeshiva Shomayla, Sheino Roy Lakach, a person who is sitting there because he acquired the right, and actually Kabbalah Zeh Oding Aruchani. He's not going to be able to get the scar. The scar is that you're soaking in all the spirituality of all the Torah that you've learned. The person doesn't have any Torah in his brain. He's not going to be able to soak anything in. It's just going to be like some guy who's dressed up like a general sitting around in a cabinet meeting who's not going to be able to open up his mouth. That's not going to be a reward. It's just going to be an embarrassment for him. Makadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, he says that... this type of a sakar is not something that you could possibly purchase. And then he goes into the question of, he says that if you're Messiah Tamachacham, so fine, you're Messiah, a person's learning, so Kadosh Baruch Hu will give you the ability to learn a little bit yourself. He quotes from Todos Ish Romi, that he figured out a Kavachomer Mitzahat Sfardayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him something to come up with so that since he supported Talmidei Chachamim, he can at least sit in the area and have some sort of a cover that he's also a Talmid Chacham, but not certainly of the same level of a person who is learning full time. But what about the mitzvos? The Schar Mitzvos, he says, that's not like a general badge. That's like, that's like a badge of honor. So a Schar Mitzvah, he says, it might be something that a person, you don't have to necessarily know how to run an army in order to have a badge of honor. So since a Schar Mitzvah is a badge of honor, so maybe that could be sold. So he says, no, even that can't be sold because it's a Dovah Shalom Bal Yolam. You don't get the Schar until you're in Olam Haba. So the person can't sell it when they're in Olam Hazeh. And number two, it's only a King and Dvarim. It's not something which is tangible. And he says that's the whole Machlokas between the Shotei Gibarim and the Rosh, whether something, that's tangible, can be sold. But even with respect to the Shiltei Gibarim, acquiring the mitzvah isn't the scar of the mitzvah, it's just the right to perform the mitzvah. And either you perform the mitzvah and you get the scar, or you don't perform the mitzvah and you don't get the scar. So therefore he says that the only thing that makes sense is to facilitate somebody's learning. If you're facilitating somebody's learning, so then you get to split the scar because of the fact that you are enabling the person to learn in the first place and to have the menucha to be able to learn. And he says something very interesting at the very, very end of the tshuva, and he says that even though that's a legitimate enterprise, and nobody questions that it's a legitimate enterprise, he says something which not all the poskim agree with. In fact, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh says explicitly differently, but he says that the person who does enter into the Yisachar, who enters into the Yisachar Zebulun relationship, does lose a little bit from his scar that he otherwise would have gotten. Now remember, we have been saying if it's not a real partnership, like the Maharam Alshiker says, so the person who's learning doesn't lose anything, just the person who's supporting him gets an independent scar pulaso. But the Nesiv seems to understand that it really is a shukmus. Says Vemes Moridin Mat is Kavoda Osik Pato Magbin Kavana Masayelo Achiyesh Reactive Yeshiva Shemayla Visangu Bizib Ashkina until they will be able to sit together Yeshiva Shemayla. That the fact that one person's learning is facilitated by the other really does give the facilitator, he claims, a scar for facilitating, but he's also going to have a higher level of Torah learning. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to enable him to learn more Torah than he otherwise would have learned. That's how he understands a whole Gemara regarding Todos Ish Romi, and why they didn't put him in Chayrim for something that he did. And he says that because the facilitator is going to be given more of a chelik in Torah so that he can enjoy Olam Haba together with the person that he's supporting, because it's a shutvus. So the person who is learning really is going to get a little bit less than they would have gotten otherwise. A very, very interesting thing. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh in Parshas Kisisa says from Hitaishis Machatzisa Shekel, you give the Machatzisa Shekel to enter into like a shutvus to enable learning, B'Shekel HaKadosh, you still walk away, the person who's learning still walks away with a full Shekel HaKadosh. He has a few drashas along those lines. The Chidah has Im Sakir Hu Babis Karo, you enter into this type of a skiris arrangement, don't worry, Babis Karo, you're still going to get your full skiris if you're learning Torah. Different allusions, different ramazim that they come up with to show him the Or HaChaim Kodesh is just like a candle. The candle can illuminate others and it doesn't, you know, lose anything from its initial candle. But those who held that this is a real genuine shukvah, like Rav Moshe, who really held that way, says, no, what are you talking about? This is not, you know, they're both contributing to this candle together. So the candle wouldn't be able to burn in the first place if not for the person who is supporting the Talmud Torah of the one who's learning. So it does mean that the one who's learning would get a little bit less. But then again, if they wouldn't be supported by the Zvulun, they wouldn't be learning altogether. Remember, Hillel didn't need the support of Shevna because he didn't need the money in order to learn. He figured out how to learn without any money. There's a very interesting, just sort of a standalone piece, by Rav Meir Auerbach. Who is Rav Meir Auerbach? He was a big, big posek in Warsaw in the 19th century. He ended up moving to Eretz Yisrael. He was the first Ashkenazic chief rabbi of Jerusalem, of Rav Meir Auerbach. Rav Meir Auerbach says that there are two different types of scholars. He tries to make peace between the shita of the Ramah, that says you can have this type of a shutvus, and at least Mikan Laba, although not Lamafreya, and the Maram Al-Shakur, in the name of Paigon, who didn't seem to distinguish between Lamafreya or Laba, just said, you know, you can't do it. Not in terms of a Shukvus anyway, you can't do it. And he says, because there are two different types of Skaros. There's a Sakhar, there are two different types of rewards that a person can receive. There is a Sakhar Siguli, and there's a Sakhar Gimuli. And the same thing with respect to an Onish. What is a Sakhar Siguli? Sakhar Siguli means that when you do a mitzvah, so there's something about your spiritual essence which is affected. That's something which you can't sell to somebody because that's only your spiritual essence which has been transformed by the fact that you did this mitzvah and nobody else did this mitzvah. But there's also something known as the Sakhar Gimuli. The Sakhar Gimuli is, okay, you did a mitzvah, you get $100. You did a mitzvah, so you get, you know, a certain quantifiable reward for the fact that you did a mitzvah, the fact that you learned Torah. So he said, as far as the Sakhar Siguli is concerned, that's something that can never, ever be sold. Not retrospectively, not prospectively. That's what the Maram Al-Shikr is talking about. As far as the Sakhar Gimuli, in terms of just, you know, what the compensation, according to the Shemayim calculator, you know, should be for the fact that you did this mitzvah, so the Sakhar Gimuli is something that is transferable, at least prospectively. That is the Chiddush that the Imre Bina came up with. All of the post-game who reckon with the Imre Bina, they all quote the Imre Bina. I grew up in Muncie, and I used to hear Shurim from time to time from Rabbi Avram Pessin, Zeke Tzadik Levach, who was the Rav of one of the shuls in Muncie. And one of the last Shurim that I heard from Rabbi Pessin was his going through this Imre Bina and very beautifully explaining it. So I have an affinity for this Imre Bina. It turns out everybody has an affinity for the Imre Bina, but they're not exactly sure how to plug the Imre Bina into the words of the Ramah or anybody else for that matter, but it's just a very interesting standalone piece with respect to the Imre Bina. And then there were all of these stories. There were these like the Maisim of people, somebody who sold half of their, you know, Olam Haba to somebody else, and then they died and they were in Shemayim, and the person, you know, summoned them in Shemayim and said, oh, I want you not to forget that you sold me, you know, half of your Olam Haba. The Chidah brings this story. I quoted it. It's a very strange story. And then the person who, you know, sold it, like, you know, has a big laugh, like, you know, a big smile. And they say, I had a big laugh, a big smile, because the sale was null and void. And of course, he didn't lose any of his Olam Haba. But then, there are other stories about a person who, like, sold all of, like, half of their Averus. Or they actually sold that another person should be responsible. One person got a lot of money, that they'll take responsibility. They'll get all the onshin for this person's Averus. And they went to Shemayim. And, you know, the guy had a pretty virtuous life, and he figures I'll, you know, get through, you know, right away, you know, all of the pearly gates, whatever they're called. And then he's told, hey, you're in big trouble because you did big gaveras. So what big gaveras? Do anything. And then he says, well, you entered into this deal. And then they had a din Torah, and then he summoned the other person to a din Torah, and the Maharsha got involved, and the Maharsha said that, you know, he has to hear this din Torah, so somehow the guy who already died had the din Torah with the person who was alive together with the Maharsha, and the Maharsha said that, no, the deal really does stick, you shouldn't have, you know, agreed to take the money for this, but it works me din arvus. And then there are others who say you can't bring rayas from Sipurim, from these types of, you know, I wouldn't call it tall tales, but, you know, whatever, rabbinic legends, yeah. They make for, you know, nice story reading, you know, at night or whatever, but, you know, you can't bring a riot from them. And others say, no, there is no such thing, and they bring a riot from Rivka, who said, Alaikil Laskabini. Well, Alaikil Laskabini is not necessarily a riot, because she was saying, you don't have to worry, because I know, I take full responsibility, because I know that you're not going to get into trouble, because I know already that this is the way it's supposed to be. That's not that she was going to bear his punishment, but she's saying, number one, I'm the one doing it, and number two, I know that it's going to work out okay. So it's not, so you don't have really, the riots go this way and that way, but at the end, Rav Asher Weiss has a piece on this in the end of Sefer Bereishis in Parshas Vayechi, and he said, we are not the ones who can necessarily make these judgments, you know, regarding the value of these types of deals and so forth. Ultimately, it's only in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but, you know, it would seem like a very strange thing that a person could really sell their responsibility. It says, Losikach Kofer L'Nefesh Rotzeach, that it's an explicit pasuk, you know, in the Torah, that if a person has committed an aveira, only they bear responsibility for being punished. They can't have somebody else take over, even for a lot of money, the responsibility or the culpability of receiving the punishment.
Moshe Rabbeinu, Mechini Namisifach.
And they quote that as well, Mechini Namisifach, and they say, can't bring a riot from Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu also was showing his tremendous Mesivas Nefesh for the Jewish people, and ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you know, that you don't get to do that, so therefore, you know, it's really a riot for care. So what's interesting is that both Rav Moshe and the Minchas Yitzchak Dayan Weiss deal with the question of what if a person wants to give the money sort of as an expiation. They want to be the Zvulun and Yisachar Zvulun deal because they're a big sinner. And this way, they figure they're going to get money. They'll get like the skara for Yisachar learning Torah, and they don't have to worry so much about the fact that they're a Mechal Shabbos. So both the Minchas Yitzchak and Rav Moshe are very much against this. The Minchas Yitzchak says, I'm against it because of the fact that what's the idea of the Yisachar Zvulun relationship? That they're both going to be sitting together. They're going to be sitting, you know, in heaven together, but you can't have somebody who's a Mechal Shabbos who's going to, you know, be sitting next to this person who is a big, you know, learner and who is a big Talmid Chacham because he's going to bring, you know, embarrassment to the B'nai Torah that such a person is sitting there. So therefore you can't have a deal that's going to lead to embarrassment in Olam Haba. That's the explanation that the Minchas Yitzchak gives. But he starts off his discussion. He says, after Eilanu Chelik Ministeros, these are really what we say Anisteros L'Hashem Elokeinu. These types of, you know, deals and what's going to end up happening is obviously, you know, something which is in the Torah Anister. But he says that it's just pasnish to make a shutvus with somebody who is Mechal Shabbos, who just has no business of being there in the higher realms of Olam Haba for sure. But Moshe has three other, you know, explanations, very practical explanations. But Moshe's explanations are, number one, that you can't trust somebody who's a Mechal Shabbos that they're really going to give so much money for somebody learning Torah. They're going to say, why am I giving away half of my possessions for somebody who's learning Torah? It's just not going to last. Number two, he says that it's going to be a mekach tos, because this person thinks that by giving over all of his money, it'll be like an expiation or a free get-out-of-jail pass for all of his times that he was Mechal Shabbos, and that's not true. He's still not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. And number three, if this person is going to be Mechal Shabbos, so the person is learning Torah, he can't take his money because it's Schar Shabbos. He can't be Neder from Milacha Shabbos. So he gives three independent reasons why it just doesn't make sense to have a deal like this with somebody who is a Mechal Shabbos.
If it's part of Tshuva? In other words, if the person steals from the public, now he wants to donate it to build a shul, is that part of his tshuva process to offset?
That's a question if a shul can really be, you know, a shul is affected spiritually by the source of the funds, so, you know, that would be problematic. You know, he wants to give his money, you know, maybe for, you know, public works, like, you know, for a public well that everyone is going to have, like, water to drink, you know, that's a different story, but yeah. Something of a spiritual nature, I don't know. But what's interesting is that in the Minchas Yitzchak, in his discussion, he quotes from the Igeres, the letters of the Chazon Ish, and he says the Chazon Ish himself, the Chazon says, "Hakol modim shu'inyan shuach u'kamim nochei menu." However you understand the Yisachar Zvulun arrangement, whether it is like a genuine partnership or whether it's just like the Maamar Mashko says that it's skar gemulo, sort of like a separate reward for, you know, supporting Talmidei Chachamim, he says everybody holds that it's a legitimate thing. And the Chazon Ish himself made a shtar haskem Ben Yisachar Zvulun, he himself, it sounds like for himself, he made a Yisachar Zvulun arrangement for 1 year. For 1 year. And that's a very interesting thing. Rav Moshe says that when you have a Yisachar Zvulun arrangement, it should really be for at least 3 years, because the idea of Yisachar Zvulun is that the Zvulun is enabling Yisachar to be a top-notch Talmid Chacham. He says that Yisachar Zvulun doesn't make sense if it's just for things that every single person needs to know. He says, like Gemara Rashi tells us, everybody needs to learn. It means that the person is going to be like a gadol ador or something like that. So to really be a gadol b'tor, you need at least 3 years. You know, maybe the Chazon Ish only need 1 year. You know, but you need at least like 3 years. He brings a raya from Ksuvos that, you know, talking about like how long, you know, it makes sense for a husband to leave to learn, you know, and leave his wife. We don't hold in the end that he could leave for 3 years, but there's avamin in 3 years, because that's how much time you really need. The other thing Ramosha says is that, since Ramosha holds it, it's a shutvus mamish, he says that's why it has to be mamish 50-50, because when it's 50-50, so it's a real shutvus. If it would just be like a payment of money, now of course from the Rabbeinu Yerucham, it sounds like any chalik, you know, is acceptable, and that really seems to be the pashas of many of the sources, but he says, no, you look at the Raman, the Shach, it says 50-50, because once it's a partnership, what did we say last week? We said in a partnership, it's different from a normal worker situation. Normal worker situation, we say that a poel can be chose b'chatzi yom. A worker can retract, like in the middle of his work term, because liya b'neis lo'avadim, lo'avadim lo'avadim. But a partner is not allowed to retract until the end of the partnership term, whatever the partnership term is, that you're going to finish a particular business enterprise, a particular transaction, or whatever. So he says that's why it has to be 50-50. It's a very, very interesting thing. The other thing that Rav Moshe says is, we had the discussion last week about the shutvos regarding the Rambam, the Ramban, the Rambam, the Ravid, about whether shutvos, you can make a kinyan on things that have not yet been earned. So he says that you have there the shita of the Ravid. The Ravid said that a person can say, well, even though the merchandise hasn't been purchased yet, a person commits their own body, their own like physical handiwork to the transaction, and therefore that is a tangible thing, and therefore the kinyan is chal on that. So Rav Moshe says, even the Rambam would agree, that when it comes to this type of an arrangement, the Rambam doesn't necessarily talk about it, but Yisachar and Zebulun, that there's such a strong Gemira's Das that a person is pledging themselves to facilitate the learning of Torah because of their great love and affection for Torah, to actually be involved and immersed in the learning of Torah, that of course it's understood that a person is committing their physical bodies and their physical abilities to this enterprise, even if the merchandise has not yet been earned. So everybody would agree that there is a requisite kinyan, you know, for this type of a transaction. I thought that was also a very beautiful thought. The last thing that I'll just conclude with is, okay, so what happened in this case? So the person came to, so according to Rav Moshe, it's not, he also says it's not a din of staka, it's a special din within, you know, within Talmud Torah. It's a special aspect of Talmud Torah. So the other thing, so what happened in this case, where the person said, I want the declaratory judgment. I want the declaratory judgment that I'm entitled to the Olam Haba of this of this rabbi, because I spent, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, on the show in return for his Olam Haba. So here was the question. The question was whether the Beis Din should take the case in the first place. In other words, whether we should hear the Tainus and the Tvius, because we have to make, you know, a determination. What cases are we even going to hear in the first place? We just look at the petition. We look at the claim. We have to make a determination, assuming the truth of all the claims, is there a possibility that we would provide relief altogether? It's kind of like an internal sort of, you know, motion to dismiss summary judgment, you know, determination that we have to make from the standpoint of the Beis Din whenever, you know, people submit a claim. So I was asked to make a determination. So I said four words, and that was the end of it. Ein lanu esek v'nistaros. That was it. So we turned down the case. Okay. Some cases are beyond our jurisdiction.
But did he have something in writing?
What?
The case was in New York?
The case was,
did he have something in writing, or was it all verbal?
I think it was all verbal. According to the way the claim was presented, it was all verbal.
It's not clear that the Beis Din would have the call us to enforce it anyway.
We couldn't anyway. As I said, this is really something, you know, that is, as I said, beyond our jurisdiction.
Right. Would it make a difference if it was in writing?
What?
Would it make a difference if it was in writing?
I don't know. I don't think so. Okay, very good.
Thank you. Thank you.